My name is Juicy Pat Lucy, and you're listening to episode 40 of The Juicy Details. How did I make it 40 episodes? Beats me. Anyways, it is April, and that means it's still hardcore month here on The Juicy Details. Throughout the entire month, I've been interviewing professional wrestlers who are considered hardcore. And today I have a different kind of hardcore. Earlier this month, I've interviewed Eddie Kingston, who's a hard-hitting guy who's considered hardcore. I've interviewed CZW guys such as Matt Tremont, Ron Mathis, or Deathmatch guys. Today I have, like I said, a different kind of hardcore. He's more of a death-defying, high-flying hardcore guy. If you've seen it, any of his matches, you know what I'm talking about. Today I have Michael the Bomber Facade with me. Welcome, Facade. How you doing?
Yo, Juicy Pat Lucy, the Neon Ninja, the Aerosol Assassin, the Aerial Arsonist is here to stay with us.
Yeah, I was going to say all those nicknames, but I think it was better if you said it. Yeah, yeah.
Hardcore and high flying, as you know, is my days in the absolute intense wrestling. I love to do both.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah, for sure. So, let's get right into the interview. I think you just heard some echoes. It's good. It's good. Sometimes we fuck up here on The Juicy Details. For those listening for the first time, I do fuck up sometimes. Not Facade, though. You're fine. All right. Yeah, okay.
For the time being.
Yeah, for the time being. So, right into the interview. First question. How did you become a fan of professional wrestling in the first place?
When I was a kid, I used to watch wrestling with my dad growing up, and he was always a fan. We used to go to the Civic Arena down here in Pittsburgh, and that's pretty much the gist of it. First wrestling match I can remember seeing was probably the Ultimate Warrior Hulk Hogan Ultimate Challenge from WrestleMania 6. But, I mean, I'm sure there were other things that I had caught before that, but that's just the first thing that, I can remember seeing.
Do you remember some of your favorites growing up?
Yeah, some of my favorites were Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, Mr. Perfect, and then later on came Shawn Michaels and, more the ECW-type guys, Rob Van Dam, Sabu, a few of those.
Sounds like you didn't watch too much WCW back then.
After a little bit of that, through the WCW guys, I like Vampiro, Ultimo Dragon, a little bit of Rey Mysterio, and, the Cruiserweights over in WCW.
Given I was a fan of Vampiro, too, but his entire run to WCW, I thought, was just terrible.
Yeah, it's quite unfortunate. They did some crazy, crazy stuff with him, and, since they brought back the WWE Network, I actually went back and watched a lot of that stuff because WCW through that time period was quite the train wreck, but was something awesome to watch as a fan, going back now, unfortunately, knowing how everything eventually played out. It's pretty funny, the whole, WCW 2000 era was something like ECW, but a little bit more production and a little bit more off the rocker, if you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. My first day of WWE Network, I immediately jumped on to any pay-per-view from 2000 from WCW. And it was just... It was out there, man. It was crazy.
WCW Nickhead.
Moving forward, later on, as you continue to expand your professional wrestling horizon, when did you decide you wanted to become a wrestler?
Well, growing up, as most wrestlers have done when they were younger, we did a little bit of backyard wrestling. I actually grew up with Chuck Wexler, and we got all the kids in the neighborhood and our school to wrestle with us. And, it had to be, at least around whenever we were 16, when I was 16, that I decided that I want to wrestle. But, throughout the course of everything, it ended up being until I was about 20 before I actually made the step to go ahead and get trained, and, you know, where I was financially able to afford to be able to do so.
Something I've been wondering for the longest time, and since you sort of brought it up, when or how did you think of the Neon Ninja gimmick? Did that start in Backyard Wrestling, or did that start way later on at the beginning of your professional career?
The whole thing, Backyard Wrestling, I didn't really have so much of a name or kind of a persona, if you will, or a facade. I really, it was just kind of a thing I did that I was more just like this skater, skateboard kid because I skateboarded back then. And I just did some random stuff, a lot of which I still do today, move-wise. But as far as, you know, the character, the Neon Ninja, it was a natural progression, you know, starting out. When I first started, I was Michael the Bomber Facade or the Suburban Terrorist. And then as everything progressed, I dropped the Michael part and, you know, just became straight Facade. And the Neon Ninja came after that. I started out wearing, you know, kind of like camouflage and like darker colors, black and red, stuff like that. But I'm not sure exactly at what point that I just decided that I was going to, you know, wear more or less of what I was wearing outside of the ring, and that being bright, vibrant colors as, you know, just a transition into the character, becoming the Neon Ninja both in the ring and out.
I gotta say, when I first started watching you, like, live, I loved your intro. It was, what was it? He's roaming the streets at night, creeping while you're sleeping. Like, that legit, like, freaked me out a little bit. holy shit, is this guy really creeping on people at night?
That's a little bit of a reference to, you know, there was a couple of graffiti writers around here in Pittsburgh that would actually go out at night, just go up bombing and spray painting all kinds of buildings while everybody was sleeping. They really stayed up all night doing that. And, you know, me and Flexer kind of did things, you know, after hours, roaming in the streets at night, messing around in the neighborhoods, maybe spray painting sometimes, maybe getting into some other mischief that maybe we shouldn't get into in a public forum. But, That's the long and the short of it,
which is
playing off of that.
I gotta say, the most mischievous thing I've ever done when I was younger was just stay up and play Xbox late at night.
Oh, there was plenty of that, but, you know, we had to take breaks. In the area we grew up in, after so long, they instated a curfew, and we would instigate with the police. We would play a game where we would try to get the police to see us, and then we would run like hell to try to not get caught. To the point in which, say there's an intersection in some of the neighborhoods, me, Flexer, and a couple of other kids would stay at that intersection with our foot on the manhole cover of the intersection until a car, we were the last person to get caught, you know, would obviously be the one that have to get chased. But we would try to see if the cops would actually try to catch us or give chase, and just to see, we wouldn't wear anything that could discern us from any other people, but we just like to, you know, incite a little trouble.
I gotta say, that sounds like a whole lot of fun. Now you're making me regret my childhood. All of it. Should have done more.
And stuff like that, and you know, hiding in bushes and on people's sheds and stuff in the middle of the night. We kind of got a reputation in our neighborhood that we were the kids always getting in trouble. And sooner or later, we had to, you know, move on to a different neighborhood because the police would get called and they always knew it was us.
You crazy kids, you.
Got to keep yourself occupied somehow.
Good point. Let's see. Who were some of your influences in your career, especially starting out when you were younger?
Initially, whenever I first started out, like I said, a lot of the influences came from guys like Shawn Michaels, Rob Van Dam, Sabu, Ultimo Dragon, Hayabusa, all those guys that were like, you know, technical, but high flyers as well. The guys that could, you know, do martial arts style things agility-wise, but also whenever they needed to, they could technical wrestle, mat wrestle, you know, things like that. And, you know, guys like Mr. Perfect, whenever I was younger, before I really realized, before I even, you know, started wrestling and realized what I could do physically, he was one of the guys that I always thought was awesome, both in character and in the ring.
No, yeah, that sounds all good, and, you know, definitely when I first saw you live, I immediately thought of, like, Sabu, and, no, especially when you look back in your early career, I think there's a lot of Sabu in you, and even to this day, yeah, there's still a bit of Sabu in you.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely more so into taking risks and not really caring what happened, but, you know, I've got a little smarter and a little wiser. Learn to pick my shots a little better, but, you know, I still like to get down.
Yeah, like, being completely honest, like, especially some of the stuff I've seen live, you have done some crazy shit that didn't always turn out for the best, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, what do they say, high risk, high reward? That's definitely the way I like to play.
No, yeah, that's exactly the way to look at it. So, okay, let's get into the main topic of the show of the month, hardcore wrestling. The first question I'm asking everyone on here about the topic is, simply, what is hardcore wrestling to you? Like, if you had to define it, what were your definition of hardcore wrestling be?
Hardcore wrestling would be stepping out of the realm of the normalcy in wrestling inside a ring. That being maybe going outside of the ring, fighting amongst the fans, using anything and everything within your environment to entertain those fans and to pull off things and moves that you wouldn't normally see in the normal context of a wrestling match. You know, maybe running up the wall, doing a backflip and landing on somebody, or, you know, climbing a pole, using chairs, tables, things like that. And, you know, even on the grander scale of the ultra-violent type of thing, you know, you see people using light tubes, setting stuff on fire, beating people with thumbtacks, salt, lemon juice, cactuses, some really crazy stuff along the crazier ultra-violent end of the spectrum.
Being perfectly honest here for a sec, I think out of all the guests so far, I think that's probably my favorite definition of hardcore wrestling from a different perspective. No, you really hit a lot of nails on the head. And, okay, second question, more of an opinionated question. Who is hardcore? This is going to be broken down into two parts. Who is the most hardcore guys of all time, and who's the most hardcore guys today?
Yeah, that's really kind of hard to say, because there's a lot of guys nowadays that do some hardcore stuff that, you know, I don't really follow hardcore and ultraviolet wrestling as much as I once did, but some of the most hardcore of all time are definitely like Sabu, Hayabusa, Terry Funk, Cactus Jack, you know, those are some of those legendary guys, Onita, you know, I could go on with it, but on the whole Japanese scale. But some of the more crazier guys that I've seen nowadays, you know, Nick Mondo, I always thought was really awesome. And, you know, he's been since retired. Sabu is still killing it, even though he's almost 50 now. Matt Tremont is a pretty crazy guy. I'll definitely say that. Sami Callihan, he's another one that wasn't afraid to get real crazy. Trying to think here. New Jack is one of those other legendary psychotic hardcore guys. Necro Butcher, still going strong. Yeah, I mean, outside of all those other guys, like Thumbtack Jack, he's also retired. Matt Tremont, those guys really, they're really hardcore. But, you know, it seems like when you go so hard for so long, that it tends to take a toll on your career. And that's something that I learned both from Sabu and doing it myself. So, yeah.
Wow. Like, you definitely named a lot of names I haven't heard on, again, before from past guys, I mean, from past guests. Most of them have named Terry Funk and Mick Foley, but I don't think anyone's named New Jack yet, and that actually surprises me. Cause,
I mean, anybody that has, like, a Wolverine claw or a sickle that they're going to just straight-up cut somebody's head off with, I mean, he's got to be hardcore. And that's not to say what he does outside of the ring that makes him that much more hardcore.
I think outside the ring, New Jack is the most hardcore guy in life. That's what I like to think. Okay, now getting into more of yourself. What do you consider the most hardcore match of your own career?
Most hardcore match of my own career. There's a couple. I try to always pick one whenever people ask, like, the most of something. I like to, I'd say, like, maybe, like, out of my, like, the top three, would definitely have to be some of those wars I had with Juicy J, Delicious Jimmy DeMarco. That, the ladder match that everyone has seen from AIW, where, I overshot the ladder and Arabian Spacebuster the floor and split Jimmy's head wide open, and he was the bloodiest I've ever seen him. That was one amongst the crazier ones. But even that whole feud with me and him, all of those matches there were just insane. We were killing ourselves. And we wrestled in that 1 week alone where we had the blow-off to the feud, we wrestled like four or five times. Seven times in a matter of 7 days, because there was the Night of Intensity, the tournament, which had this, which saw the finals of me and Jimmy D, and then we had that beer bottle on a pole match after I busted the beer bottle over his head. Outside of that, the match I had with Sabu at the ECW Arena on my birthday this past year was pretty awesome and pretty hardcore. The very first CZW aerial assault I ever done, where I did a 630 off a box and hardly got caught, and actually did a triple jump and put myself through a table. That was also pretty insane. But I'd say out of those, the feud with Jimmy D, that match with Sabu, and the very first aerial assault, those are high up there.
A lot of good matches you named. The Jimmy D ladder mashup was my second AIW show, and that was the one that featured the intergender no rope barbed wire match. And being someone who didn't go to independent shows a lot back then, seeing that kind of stuff, and my only second AIW show, I was just like, what did I get myself into? And five years, 6 years later, I still say that.
Gordon Haley hatred is really, it's pretty crazy. And Thor getting choked out with that barbed wire in his mouth was pretty intense. I'm like that.
Very absolutely intense. I had to. Okay. How about your worst injury or some of your worst injuries throughout your career?
I've sustained a couple. One, I actually tore a couple of ligaments in my knee last year, and I'm almost fully recovered from that. And that's just one of those ones that you just hope for the best and hope that it heals the right way and hope that you don't need surgery. I got injured in a match with Marion Fontaine at Hybrid Wrestling a few years back, and that is actually an injury that I can never get repaired because I fractured multiple small bones in my right wrist that got compressed and then fused together, and I've actually lost range of motion in my wrist, and it actually hurts me every single day. Like, I can't write or lift weights or anything without it hurting. That's definitely the worst injury because I'm right-handed also. But other than that, I've got a couple of random crazy injuries that really took some out of me. I crushed one of my toes a few years ago, and I actually had to forfeit the intense title way back when. And then I broke my foot. I rolled my ankle practicing something before the show at Extreme Rising in November of 2012. And then I wrestled Bestia on it later that night and further injured it, and I had to take some time off of that. Those are really the most serious injuries I ever got. I mean, you know, I broke fingers a couple of times, and I broke my nose, but, like, those really wasn't as bad as the foot and the knee and my wrist, which, you know, like I said, still hurts till today.
Yeah, that does sound all brutal, man. I never thought I would hear a guy getting injured during a Marion Fontaine match. That just doesn't come to mind when I think of, like, bad injuries like that.
And the crazy thing is, too, that all the injuries were, like, I've never been injured by someone. It's always been injuries that I've almost self-inflicted.
No, that totally makes sense, too. Last thing I want to do, I call it Juicy Association, right? So, I'm going to name off a couple of names that you've worked with over the years. Guys that you know very well. Some you've already mentioned before, earlier. But, I'm going to name them off, and then when I name them, you gotta say the first word that pops in your head about them, that describes them. And if you'd like to tell us some story or anything else, say anything else about them, you're free to do so. Cool?
Sure.
Yeah. Lewis Linden.
Lewis Linden. Kung Fu Master. He's definitely one of the guys that, you know, I've been in the ring with many a times, both teaming with and being on the other side. And every time that we had a match, it was definitely something different because he is, you know, much like myself, he does a lot of the aerial martial arts style. And I think he's totally underrated because some of the stuff he does, he's always doing something new, something innovative. And I enjoy working with him.
Yeah, totally. Good dude, good wrestler.
Yeah.
Sammy Callahan,
that shit crazy. He's a guy that I got to know very well from the Ohio area when he was still working, when he was still a Husky fellow, and working over American Lucha Corps whenever they were still running those shows. Been in the ring with him so many times, beat the hell out of each other in like three different states, and every time I felt I could feel the progression, and made me step my game up, and I enjoyed every match with him. And like I said, I still have battle scars to prove it.
I believe it. I believe he's batshit. Shima Zion.
He's another one who innovative. Innovative is the first thing I would say because he's always coming up with something new too. He been all over the place at this point. And every time that I'd work with him, he always had something new to offer, always helping me. We always shared a lot of time and experiences on the road, going to a lot of places. He helped me, you know, get my name out there. And I got a lot of respect for him. And, you know, he's still another one of those guys who's got a big future ahead of him.
Oh, for sure. I'm happy for his success in TNA. I hope it continues. That was a good impression. Sometimes tag team partner of yours and another good opponent of yours, I think, Jason Gorey,
another underrated guy, where he is always developing his gimmick further and always not afraid to change it up, to innovate. You know, and most of the time you see him as a heel, but, you know, his athleticism really tends to shine through where a lot of the heel tactics, kind of like not dare I say Ric Flair, but Ric Flair kind of reaction where no matter how much he cheats, people still appreciate it. But another guy that I've shared a lot of time with on the road, spilled many of blood, wars all over, like 7 different states with. And, you know, it's always a fun time when I get in the ring with him.
Jason Gorey and Ric Flair.
Yeah.
That analogy, that's...
It's the bloody, and the blonde hair that does it.
I never thought of it like that, but very excellent point. And then, how about Johnny Gargano? You seem to know him for a long time.
Johnny Gargano, competitor. He is quite the competitor, where every match, he goes out there and he entertains, but it's a fight. Because he will not, he's another guy that doesn't give up, that is always focused on the business and always coming up with something new. And, you know, it was a long time since we got back in the ring. We were in a tag team together, and then we went our separate ways. But just recently, we had a match at IWC, and you know, just to, like I said, you can always tell the progression. You can always feel like you got to step your game up because there's always something new to offer whenever you get in the ring with those guys.
And then I know we've talked about him, you've talked about him a lot throughout this podcast. But just for the sake of it, last name Sabu.
Sabu, panic. Wrestling Sabu is like living through a panic attack, where it's you never know what you're gonna expect. Like it's always fun, but it's nerve wracking because he is as crazy as he's made out to be. And that's all you should really say, because you know guys like him, I don't feel like they don't make them like that anymore, I guess you could say.
No, they certainly don't. And if I can quickly bring up a funny story about you and Sabu. So it was your first encounter, at least to my knowledge, at AIW, Absolution, right? And if you know Sabu, which it seems like you do, you know he does have a bit of a reputation for messing up a lot, botching, like... And if you watch a Botchamania episode from the early days, you see him a lot in there. And this is one of my first times seeing him live. And going into the match, I thought he was going to botch a couple spots. But it turns out he was perfectly fine pretty much throughout the entire match. And it was only you that messed up, like, on one spot, I remember. It involved a chair or something. Like, it was a minor. It wasn't anything big. Like, it didn't, like, mess up the entire match afterwards. But I just remember, like, laughing my ass off afterwards that, oh, holy shit, Sabu didn't botch. It was the other guy.
I'm not sure I know which part it is, but I remember that match. That match could have been better. Like I said, those matches with Sabu are definitely, it's hard to communicate in the ring with Sabu. But, you know, one of the things about him that he's just, you can always count on him being there regardless of the botching or whatever you want to say. The whole thing with that is that, you know, whenever you do such crazy things, you can't always count on the variables. Like sometimes you got ropes that roll that are slippery or chairs that are all screwy. I do remember one of the issues that we had was Sabu was really mad because of the matches on the card were a little weird in a way where we went on after a street fight and we were a false count anywhere match that they used almost all the chairs. So we didn't really have many things to propel ourselves off of, if you know what I mean. And then whenever we tried to grab tables out from under the ring, One of the tables actually opened up under the ring and jammed itself under there. So a lot of the match ended up getting cut short, and it was unfortunate because of, you know, just the circumstances that we were dealt with. But, you know, all in all, I feel like it laid the groundwork for the matches that we had coming after that, because they each got progressively better. You know, that the second match we had was a ladder match, and that match was awesome. The third match was a four-way, which was, it was fine. And then that last match we had, Extreme Rising in December, I think really set the tone for us.
No, that's very awesome to hear that. That it seems like you and Sabu have a good chemistry together.
Yeah, definitely. At this point, I feel like, I feel like anytime we get in there, we know each other now, and we know what we can do. And, you know, it's not just some kid trying to do Sabu's moves and stuff. You know, like, he knows that I have a respect for him, and that, you know, like I said, he knows what I can do. And I think I proved myself to him, and that now there's a mutual appreciation.
No, that's very good to hear that that you two have that that communication together going well. You, like I said, your chemistry, and so no, that's very awesome to hear that you and Sabu are pretty tight together. Hopefully, it's not the end of it. I would love to see maybe a couple more rounds.
Me too. We see, you know, outside of, like I said, everything that happened in the first couple matches we had. You know, he's one of my favorite opponents. You know, outside of being a fan of his growing up, it's gone beyond that at this point. Because, like I said, now it's not to say we're on an even playing field, but it's you know, there he realizes that or recognizes that I'm not just some guy trying to bite off his style. That it's more of a inspirational type thing where some of the things I do were more derivatives of him more than just a copycat.
Well, Fasad, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. It was great interviewing you. To end it, is there anything you'd like to say and plug? Because I know you have a couple things this weekend. I'm going to be at the show where you're facing AJ Styles. Is there anything you'd like to say about that match or just, anything else in particular? The floor is yours.
Sure. You can always follow me on the Twitter at one facade, FACADE, the number one facade. Also on Instagram, same thing, one facade, Facebook, all the same. This weekend, got a big match. Many fans are calling it a dream match. And, you know, to many fans, it is. Myself versus AJ Styles for the first time ever at Remix Pro in Marietta, Ohio. It's sure to be a doozy. I saw AJ Styles 2 weeks ago, and, you know, he watched my match, scouted me a little, and, you know, he's excited, I'm excited, and me and AJ Styles go way back. He's been in IWC rings before, and, you know, I always came to him for help and advice, and now the tables have turned where we actually get to set foot one-on-one in the ring. Outside of that, in a couple weeks here, beginning of May, there's going to be Extreme Rising back in Pittsburgh. Not sure exactly what I'm doing for that yet. May of the 17th, got IWC Road to Super Indy back in Pittsburgh at the Court Time Sports Center. And you'll see VOW Wrestling. That's going to be on May the 2nd, also here in Pittsburgh. You know, a couple other things coming up. For everybody out on the East Coast, out in the New Jersey area, check me out in Rahway at the Supercard at Pro Wrestling Syndicate on June 7th.
Well, no, it sounds all good. Like I said, I'll be there at Remix in Marietta this upcoming weekend to see you and AJ go at it. And the Honky Tonk Man's there. So if you're not an AJ Styles or a Facade fan, there's always Honky Tonk Man, and everyone's a fan of him. Man. Everyone's a fan.
Kevin Steen, Adam Pearce, completely stacked card. If you like ladies wrestling, there's a couple of girls on there.
I love Sassy Steffi, so I'll definitely be there. Yes, all good. Well, yeah, Fasad, once again, thanks for coming on. Great talking to you, man, and look forward to the weekend seeing you again.
Yeah, No problem, Juicy Pat Lucy. I'll see you on the flip side.
On the flip side, and thank you all for listening to another episode of the Juicy Details. I hope to see you all on the flip side.